Well, it's such an important film. Yoruba Richen is the acclaimed filmmaker and director of Free Joanne Little, which is having its world premiere this Wednesday and Thursday at the Doc NYC Film Festival here in New York. Happy birthday to Ali Tutich. I'll be speaking in Amsterdam at the International Film Festival there on Saturday. Check our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
Abstinence means not having sex, right? But what is sex? An intercourse? And what the heck is outer course? Well, people define sex, abstinence, and outer course in different ways. For some people, abstinence means not doing any kind of fooling around. No oral sex, vaginal sex, anal sex, nothing. They're abstaining from it all. Not only does this type of abstinence do a great job of preventing pregnancy, it's 100% effective, it also guarantees you won't get a sexually transmitted infection. For some other people, abstinence means not having vaginal intercourse. They do the other stuff, just not the thing that can lead to a pregnancy. All that other stuff is what we mean by outer course. Outer course is sex play without the penetration. It's like intercourse without the inner... you get it. Kissing, touching, grinding, massage, masturbation, sex talk, all of that can be lumped into what's called outer course. Outer course is also a great method of birth control. As long as no sperm get in the vagina, there's no risk of pregnancy. And if you avoid vaginal, anal, and oral sex, you reduce your risk for sexually transmitted infections as well. Like all methods of birth control, abstinence and outer course are more effective the longer and better you use them. They require determination, self-control, trust, and good communication. It also helps to know about other ways to protect yourself from unintended pregnancy and STDs, just in case you decide to have intercourse. If you'd like to learn more about outer course and abstinence, you should check out PlannedParenthood.org. If you're a teen, you might want to look into Teen Talk. There's tons of information and discussions.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's Tuesday night, 6 p.m., time for another edition of Off the Wall. Thank you. I'll tell everybody. I will. I've got a microphone here, Carl. I'll say it. I'm sorry.
Now you're talking.
That's unprofessional. Good evening. It's another edition of Off the Wall here on the mighty USB. Post-election day. Yeah, you know, I was pretty happy last week, wasn't I? I was dancing around. I thought things went pretty well. And they did. You know, Democrats scored big. They kicked ass and well-deserved, I think. Oh, by the way, this is Emmanuel. That's Kyle over there.
What?
And we're still coming down from the high of that. Well, you know, it's good to see reaction. Like, you know, when we go to the No Kings rallies, when we see people standing up for their rights, you know, fighting back against ICE raids and things like that. And boy, they've been busy, especially out east lately. Ugh. But yeah, it was something. And, you know, Mondani, I'm not afraid of him. I'm not afraid of him at all. And I don't think you should be either. I think we need somebody who can speak forcefully and inspire people and make change. Of course, you know, this idiot who's running for governor next year, Stefanczyk, is that her name? Stefanczyk?
Stefanik.
Stefanik. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Yeah, you know, you make fun of people's names. We can make fun of your names, too. Her thing is, at one point I heard her accusing Mondani, accusing Hochul of backing taxing the rich. As if that's a liability these days. Maybe it is. Maybe in Nassau County it is. I don't know. But yeah, you dare to say that you want to tax the rich. Well, of course you should tax the rich. They have the money. That's where taxes come from. Why would you be against that unless, you know, you're one of the rich people? Sure, that makes sense. But for the rest of us, why on earth would you be against that? It means less taxes for you if you tax the rich more. And since they have much more, they don't feel it nearly as much as we do down on the bottom part of the ladder. So, you know, we have to challenge these assertions that are continually made in our face, where night is day and blue is red and all kinds of things just don't make sense when you think about them for a moment. And, you know, the world has been turned upside down. We all know that. And, well, you know, like I said, I was happy. I was happy. And then the weekend happened. And I guess I should have seen it coming. You know, Democrats can't handle victory very well. I don't know what it is exactly. They're comfortable losing. And when they win, they just kind of freak out. And this was no exception. Couldn't even let a week go by. You know, I wanted to do one show where you know, we were just happy about, you know, the change that happened last week and the change that is promised in the future. And we had this government shutdown, which was going over a month. And it was for a very good reason, namely the Obamacare benefits that were being gotten rid of, and many people would be suffering with rates doubling, sometimes going up even more. And that was the line. That was the line that the Democrats drew in the sand.
Well, it was extending cuts or extending subsidies,
that's the word,
that themselves were covering the rising costs. And you can make an argument, or they're trying to argue that the subsidies themselves are the cause of inflation. But really, it's that healthcare costs themselves are out of control, and that there should be a little bit more intervention from the government side, right, to prevent the patients and people that they're covering from being left in the lurch, you know, without anything,
mm-hmm,
and no coverage and incredible costs. This has to do with drug pricing and all kinds of things.
It resonated with people. It really did. You know, it was a clear message. We are protecting people's healthcare as it is. Sure, you know, it could be better than what it is, but to make it even worse, unashamedly to make it worse, is the worst thing you can do. And finally, the Democrats were getting that message out. And after Election Day, and up until Election Day, the Trump administration was just looking so bad. There were such bad optics. I mean, there was a judge who ruled that the Trump administration had to start paying the SNAP benefits. You know, that's basically food stamps. And they fought it in court. They were going to court to stop themselves from having to give people what they were owed in order to eat, you know, for food. They were literally going to court to not live up to their obligations to give people what they needed. And, you know, there is no good look for that. I'm sorry. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. There's no way. I even saw the people on Fox trying to, they couldn't do it. They couldn't make that look good. It looked so terrible. And then, you know, there were states, mostly Democratic states, yes, but, you know, anyone was free to do this, that were basically saying, you know what, we are going to take what has been allocated to us and apply it to SNAP immediately so that people don't starve. And the Trump administration started threatening those states with incredible penalties for daring to try to feed people who, through no fault of their own, were not getting their benefits. That's not a good look. There were so many things out there that the Trump administration was doing, that having extravagant parties at Mar-a-Lago, you know, Great Gatsby theme. Yeah, it's which, you know, I don't know if you heard this, Kyle, but basically Great Gatsby, you know, it's a book everybody reads in high school. It's about a bunch of drunken people in the North Shore of Nassau County who basically wind up driving drunk and people die and things like that. And literally, the slogan for the party was, "A little party never killed anyone," when that's exactly what happened in the book that the party is based on. So they don't even read their own book that they're basing parties on. It's bad optics. It is so bad. And people were blaming Trump for the shutdown more than they were blaming the Democrats, by a lot. And, you know, the election basically underlined this, but every poll that you would see would show where the blame was being cast. You know, because the only thing the Democrats were asking for was to, you know, extend those subsidies. And they flat out wouldn't do it. And they were willing to shut down the government to not take that responsibility, you know, to not extend health care subsidies to people who really needed it. And, you know, if you ask yourself, how much would that have cost? It's a fraction of what was given to billionaires in tax cuts, that's for sure. So, you know, people are waking up. I don't want to put it in the past tense as if it's not happening anymore, but people are definitely waking up then, and they still are.
And they're still going to be as upset. The thing is, it's not going to be as, I don't know, it's not going to have the same momentum that it does when you're living through a shutdown at the same time. But I guess if this has already happened, like, okay, how do we remind people? How do people stay engaged and moving forward? Because, I mean, what is the plan from Democrats? Because we're not waiting around to get some kind of, like, comprehensive health coverage from Republicans. They've time and time again shown that's not going to materialize in any kind of way. So how do we actually fix what whatever there is to fix, or make it so that you don't have to have these subsidies? Because without them, a lot of people really are left to pay this sort of obscene market rates, and not everybody has the kind of coverage that government employees might, or that corporate plans might. So it's important. It's important, just as important as food is in the middle of a shutdown. And like you said, it was just becoming more and more apparent that they're willing to sacrifice a whole lot of people's day-to-day livelihood to make a political point, where Democrats were themselves presenting it as a sort of line in the sand, like we will not tolerate this anymore because these things have concrete effects on a really wide swath of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about caring for, I mean, these are the people that you're going to depend on to, say, revive your economy or do whatever, you know, national political maneuvers as has been talked about, these sort of grand schemes, the grand designs of rebuilding or making America what it should be. Well, how do you do that if people are destitute, if they're just like on their backs or just constantly being exploited or you know, left to pay market costs in a market that's really got no kind of parameters to it?
Well, the short of it is, it was working. It was working. The message was getting out there. And, you know, there were attempts to say that Democrats were holding the government hostage, holding the American people hostage, but that wasn't resonating. The true hostage takers were those that had the power, the Republicans. And people saw that. And yeah, it's painful, and things were getting really messed up. Air traffic controllers were starting not to show up for work. Thousands of flights a day were being canceled. And, things were really starting to fall apart. And that's exactly what should happen when you have a shutdown. The last thing you want when you have a government shutdown is for things to be normal, you know, to be comfortable. No, we should all be feeling it. We should all be feeling it every single day. The idea is to get somebody to blink. And after that election day result, Democrats were never in a better position to get the Republicans to be the ones to blink. So what did they do? They blinked. The Democrats backed down completely. You saw me over the weekend reading my phone. I could not believe it. I just could not believe that they were caving on this, something that was within their grasp. You know, they were on the verge of victory. I think Democrats must be allergic to victory. I really do. It's there's no other explanation for this. You've gone over a month. You know, the cracks are showing. And now, by basically saying, you know what, this is too painful, we can't do this anymore, you know, we'll just let the Republicans have everything they want, more people are going to blame you for the shutdown than if it had gone another month. Because you got absolutely nothing for all the pain that was caused. You did it for nothing. And people don't like that. They don't like it when they sacrifice for nothing. They will sacrifice if it gets you somewhere. But you couldn't hold on to that. You didn't have the strength to see it through. Now, 8 senators are responsible for this. And Fetterman, I don't know if we count him as a senator because he's basically a Republican. But, all right, 7 Democrats. Basically caved and said that, we're not going to do this anymore. But here's what we got. We're gonna have a vote in the Senate on extending the subsidies. Well, you know, you kind of already did have a vote in the Senate on that. That's why the government was shut down, because there weren't enough votes to let that happen in the first place. And so the Democratic senators used the power they had with the filibuster to shut it down until they were taken seriously or until they completely gave up. So they're going to have a vote, and guess what's going to happen? They're going to lose that vote. Now, you know, the senator from New Hampshire, what's her name? Jean Shaheen, is that her name? She was giving an explanation, which is pretty much what I've been saying. You know, it's too painful. We couldn't keep going, but we have this vote. And if the Republicans vote against this, shame on them. That's it. That's your goal, to be able to say, shame on you for not voting for something you wanted. You had this incredible display of power, even being in the minority. You were winning, and you give it all up just so you can wag your finger at the other side and say, shame on you. No, shame on you, because you have basically sacrificed so much of other people's time, money, comfort for nothing. And it should be noted that of the eight senators who are labeled as Democrat, who voted with the Republicans, not one of them is up for re-election next year. Nope. So I think they acted very much like politicians. So that's where we are. A great showing on Election Day, and the American people were there. The American people were there, but the politicians, boy, I think they missed the bus on this one.
It's leadership, and I guess you can say that like their political maneuvering was to defend against their own voters, not against the opposition. They sort of lost sight of the strategy here. But definitely I would point to leadership. I don't think this is all Democrats. I think those people booing, the people that are upset, are still upset, regardless of political affiliation. So it's really about, you know, what can they, what kinds of consequences will have them register that dissatisfaction, and in what venues, you know, how will it manifest? How will it surface in other ways? I really want to know, like, what the plan is, though. Like, what is the strategy? I don't know if there is one. It just seems really inept.
Yeah, no, it's pretty shameful. Pretty shameful. And
you lose trust. You lose trust in the in the voters and in that populace.
Yeah, well, I mean,
if they're gonna be presented with a situation where they have to endure some kind of pain again, as you pointed out.
You know, Trump was booed at a football game.
That's what I was referencing, yeah.
An NFL game. He was booed. And, you know, that's not the crowd that you generally get booed at if you're, you know, a right-wing president. He basically had the crowd. I mean, I'm looking at pictures of this right now. So many middle fingers. loudly booed. It wasn't even something you could cover up. Such hostility. It was working. It really was working. And, you know, I'm not going to be a defeatist here. Maybe it will still work. Maybe he'll keep saying things that he says, and people will see him for who he truly is. Maybe people won't forget where we were. Maybe people will treat Democrats as heroes for making a stand and then backing down and resuming as normal. And maybe we'll get another chance when we do this again in January. I don't know. I'm kind of cynical right now. And I do know that Trump wants the next Washington, the Commanders, what are they called now? The Commander football stadium named after him. Can you believe that?
Yes.
It needs to be torn down if that ever happens, seriously. And just nonstop vandalism around the clock. It's your patriotic duty.
Ugh. And also, sure.
We're living in the Soviet Union. Do you realize that? You know, statues and monuments and parades and purges.
I'm aware.
Oh, it's so terrible.
I get it.
Okay, so California Governor Gavin Newsom said today he is stunned by the eight senators' decision to break with Democrats and end the government shutdown, and warned that they're not alarmed enough about President Donald Trump's political norm shattering. Now, I realize a stack of stories here. Almost all of them are about things, bad things that Trump has done. And you might say, well, Emmanuel, you have a real problem with Trump. And I would say to you, you know what? You're right. I do, because Trump is doing horrible things. It's not because I dislike the person. You know, there's this thing going around called Trump derangement syndrome, and I throw it right back at them and say, people who blindly support somebody, that's the true derangement syndrome right there. If you criticize somebody, look, I just spent 10 minutes criticizing Democrats hard. and I will do it again. You know, when somebody does not perform up to the standards that I hold them to, and President of the United States, pretty high standard, they are going to hear, well, they won't hear anything, but they, you know, I'm going to speak about it, and I hope you do too.
He has sort of become like a vehicle of awfulness, huh?
It sure seems like he's got that mastered. He really does. So the reason people speak out against Trump is because Trump does things worth speaking out against. That's all. It's simple. You know, there's nothing, there's no prejudice against this guy other than, you know, we don't like the things that he has done, the things he has said, the things that he stands for, the things that he builds, the things that he destroys. You know, there are many, many things. With every president, there is a little bit of that, but never so much as this. Never so much. And it's completely able to be backed up with evidence, with receipts, whatever you need. It's all there. So this isn't just, you know, blind hatred. It's very focused hatred based on evidence, based on facts, based on crimes, based on whatever it is you need. It's there. All right. So anyway, let's get back to Newsom here. I'm not coming in to punch anybody in the face. Great way to start a quote there. But I'm not pleased that in the face of this invasive species that is Donald Trump, who's completely changed the rules of the game, that we're still playing by the old rules of the game, he said to the AP today. And in my core, I am stunned. He was asked what he would say to the group of seven senators and one independent senator, and that's not Fetterman, by the way, who joined with Republicans in the Senate late yesterday to pass legislation to reopen the government, bringing the longest shutdown in history closer to an end. Do you know what the second longest shutdown in history was? It was the first. First Trump. Yeah. Okay. Well, you don't have to tell everybody. You learned it in the last 2 days ago. But it's
browbeating me with it.
Well, listen, the two top ones are both in Trump's terms. I just think that's significant. It tells you something about the divisiveness. Along with the ratified deal came searing criticism for the moderates from other Democrats, frustrated by what they said amounted to caving to the GOP without achieving lasting progress toward extending health care subsidies set to expire on January 1st. And keep in mind, people will be paying more as a result of the Democrats caving. And the Democrats, unfair as it is, will be blamed for that, even though it's the Republicans who did it. Democrats have a way of taking credit for things that they don't have any business taking credit for when it's something negative. They got blamed for COVID somehow. The list goes on and on and on. We've talked about it many times. Newsom goes on to say, I'm really more alarmed than it appears the eight members of my party are in the United States Senate. I'm much more alarmed about the future of our country and the world we're trying to build than they are. Now, you know, he said these remarks from the COP30 Congress in Brazil. It's happening right now.
I've heard of that. I think it's about climate.
Yeah, it's a UN summit.
And environment, yeah.
And Trump is boycotting it. And Gavin Newsom went there. California was represented, but not the United States. That's the world we are in right now. I didn't make that up. That happened.
I was just thinking about getting some solar panels.
You'll be in jail. That's considered an offense now.
Yeah, do you know there's like a thing called solar punk?
No, you'll have to explain that.
I don't even know. I don't know what type of music it is. But
it's music, solar punk?
No, I don't think it's music. It should be.
punk music that's powered by the sun.
The sun. Yeah.
That's cool.
That would be kind of a legit band.
Kids, can you do that? Can you make a punk band but only play, obviously you have to play in the daytime or unless you bring big batteries. But it's all solar. I like this. But I don't know where you pulled solar punk out of, though, where that actually comes from. But I like the concept.
No, it is a thing with people that are off-grid, I think. Uh-huh. I don't know. I was reading an article about other continents and places that have embraced this. And that's why they're having a meeting about it in Brazil.
Wow. Here's a story. I kind of skipped past one.
I'm saying don't be dissuaded.
The Trump administration demands states undo work to send full food stamps. That's a New York Times headline. The Agriculture Department, run by Trump, also threatened financial penalties against states. That's for providing food stamp benefits to low-income families. It was working. Headlines like this were everywhere, and people were seeing what an unhinged maniac this guy is. Democrats just couldn't let that play out. So frustrating, so frustrating. Here's another one. National Guard in each state is ordered to create quick reaction forces trained in civil unrest. He is afraid. He is terrified of what the people will do. He knows this is inevitable, that people will rise up against him. He knows this. Why else would you be insisting that every state have a quick reaction force in the National Guard against civil unrest? You see what's coming. You know, we're not even through 1 year of this, and already we're at this state. Believe me, you will not silence people. You will not intimidate people. You might intimidate the Democrats, sure, but the rest of the people, there's a limit. There's a limit to how much they will take. And there's also a limit to how long you can rely on just good fortune, you know, not having a major storm, having the stock market not completely fall apart, having inflation not get out of hand entirely, you know, having basically people just reach their limits with how much they can just wait for something to get better before realizing it's not going to happen. So, yeah, it's going to get more and more dire, I think. But then we have things like what happened at the BBC. Did you hear about this, the BBC thing?
Two producers, right, that from Panorama.
Panorama was the show.
That's the show, yes, yeah. And basically it was over an edit. Again, an edit. This is like nitpicking media coverage, which is really interesting, like galling, I think, because so much of the alternate media could be assailed for all kinds of like errors and stuff. But this is actually a big legal business.
Edits,
right?
Happen a lot.
Yeah.
In radio, there's edits constantly. And in television interviews, all the time. That's how you make an interview. You edit and you take the best pieces.
But it's big money in that they're going after these stations for billions of dollars.
Well hold on. Jumping ahead, because right now nobody's going after stations. It's basically the BBC came forward and said, we screwed up. We did something bad. And now I believe the order is they did that first, and now Trump is threatening them with a lawsuit. Because maybe he wasn't aware of the what happened. I might have it backwards. Maybe
they had a letter sent and then did something publicly. We don't know.
Okay, but the point is, they made. I'm going to play the edit. I'm going to play the edited version of his speech. This was January 6th. We all know January 6th, and this is how. And this wasn't, you know, a live broadcast. This was a documentary about what happened, you know, afterwards, years later,
Yeah, about his Kumbaya sing-along at the Capitol.
I guess. But this is how it was portrayed on the program.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you, and we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
Okay, so now let's listen to how that sounded unedited.
Now it is up to Congress to confront this egregious assault on our democracy. And after this, we're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down anyone you want, but I think right here, we're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them. But I said, something's wrong here. Something's really wrong. Can't have happened. And we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. Our exciting adventures and boldest endeavors have not yet begun.
Okay, that's enough of that. It's basically where the phrase, and we fight like hell, and if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore, where that shows up. Now, the edited version, it shows up right after something a bit more forceful. So it sounds like he's saying, go down there and fight, physically fight. Whereas in the second one, it comes about an hour later in the speech. Yeah, it was a long speech. This is bad. This is not a good thing to do, because it does alter the literal meaning. But what I think a lot of people are missing is that it doesn't really alter the tone, because what he says there basically can be interpreted exactly the same way. And it was. Look at what happened on January 6th. The people did go down there and they did fight like hell. They heard those words and they acted on those words. And, you know, you can also look at the fact that he didn't do anything to stop it. You know, he did not send out any messages for a long time telling people to knock it off. You see the text messages being sent to him by his own family saying that this is terrible. You have to do something. So, yeah, BBC messed up. They shouldn't have done that, or the people producing that particular program messed up. But you can't say that they were completely wrong in the way that they summarized the tone of that speech. You know, there were all kinds of people saying things that would rile up a crowd, and the crowd certainly got riled up. So I think what we're seeing here is more panic about what Trump could possibly do. We see this panic everywhere. We see it on college campuses. We see it in the media. We see it in corporate America. We even see it amongst the populace, you know, this fear of Trump. Well, that's got to stop. That really has to stop, because that is the most unhealthy thing. And it makes him more powerful than anyone should ever be. And basically, BBC is in a panic right now because they think Trump's going to come after them. You know, let Trump go after them. They can fight back, like CBS should have fought back, and they didn't. They caved as well. There's more caving going on than I wish I could finish that sentence in a clever way. There's a lot of caving going on.
It's really bad with media organizations too, because it's a chill. It makes it a sort of tangible penalty within the organization that people point to, that then frames future reporting. Everyone will be spooked. Everyone will think of this incident and how the company had to pay out, or BBC or whomever caves to it. It then becomes this thing for broadcasters and people basically self-censoring and looking over their shoulder constantly in the future, when daring and scrupulous, just critical and urgent reporting needs to be done, even if it's uncomfortable, and people won't have the will if they're thinking about these kinds of things as well.
They'll be terrified constantly.
Yeah, I mean, it just takes one to make that organization. The same thing's happening with other institutions in academia and elsewhere.
So you have this atmosphere of utter panic in the media these days, where whether you're a newspaper, radio station, a television station, a network, you are terrified of saying something critical of Trump and having him come after you. When in actuality, I believe you should be honored to actually arouse his ire, because that is the job. That is what you are there to do, is to question, to critique, to fact check. And, stir things up a bit. Now, you have to be responsible, obviously. Saying things that that aren't completely true is definitely something that you should avoid doing. But, you know, let's look at the facts here. We're talking about an administration that lies through its teeth on a regular basis and takes pride in it. And they are the last people on earth who should be given any kind of seriousness when it comes to them making accusations against somebody else. You know, because they are the ones that basically are presenting things as they absolutely are not, and not apologizing for that at all, and also not being held to account by these very same media outlets. So yeah, occasionally they're going to get it wrong as well. That is not the story. That's a story, but the story is the fact that we have this incredibly corrupt administration that stops at nothing to get what it wants, uses intimidation tactics, lies through its teeth, rewrites history, and is just basically creating a cancerous environment everywhere it goes. And it needs to be stopped one way or another. And you know, I think the people are on it. We need the politicians and we need the media to start doing their jobs.
And with the media specifically, this is not the norm, and it ought not be the norm. Like, we've a system of issuing corrections. There are ways of talking about how a broadcast was edited and explaining the sorts of choices that were made in the production of something, and you move on as an organization. Having to fight off someone who disagrees with how something was presented in court is absurd. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's an utter waste of time for these organizations. And I really think that that's an area that people need to sober up on.
Right, right. You know, in my first days at WUSB back in the late 70s, there was a tape floating around of Richard Nixon's resignation speech, where he basically was confessing to everything because of clever editing. Now that's different, you know, that's parody, obviously, and I was done in fun. But nobody was afraid to do things like that. Now, what BBC did, obviously, was very unprofessional, and they should be held to account for it, but within reason. Within reason, you know, say this is wrong, this is inaccurate, make a correction. That's how, you know, it used to work. Instead of fearing for your jobs, having people resign, worried about this maniac coming after you for billions or trillions or quadrillions, whatever number he comes up with. Yeah, that is not normal. That is something that we do not have to accept.
Imagine if people came after him with the same ferocity.
They did. They did, but it all got thrown out because he's now in power. A third world dictator just basically erases it all. But, you know, he is a sex criminal. He is a fraudster. He was found guilty. He's a felon. There are so many other things to say about this guy. And we're just going to say, oh, yeah, everything's okay. Everything's fine. No, no. We do not have to do that. This is supposedly the United States of America, and it has the documents to prove it, where you can basically say things and back them up and have opinions and celebrate living in a country where you have freedom of speech. Or we can just throw it all away and say, you know, the Constitution no longer applies. I guess it's up to us, you know?
That's definitely my attitude. Forget that. This is America.
Well, in Serbia, they're upset because they want to build a Trump condominium over there. Thousands of protesters symbolically formed a human shield today around a bombed-out military complex, vowing to protect it from development as a luxury compound by Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. And Trump is involved in this too, you better believe. Youth-led protesters drew a red line. And their red line is going to hold, I'll tell you that. Unlike our Democrats, their red line of youth-led Serbian protests, that will hold. They encircled the sprawling buildings in the capital, Belgrade, that were partially destroyed. You know, I think we saw these buildings.
Yes, we've photographed them. We've walked by these buildings all around them.
It's something. You're in Belgrade. You're in the capital of Serbia. And in the middle of the city are these bombed-out buildings. And they left them standing as a testament to what happens when NATO, it was NATO that bombed them.
It was NATO.
Yeah. 1999. So they're partially destroyed in that bombing campaign. Now the site faces demolition and redevelopment under a plan backed by the populist government of President Aleksandar Vučić, who is very pro-Trump. He says the project would boost the economy and ties with the U.S. administration. which has imposed tariffs of 35% on imports from Serbia. That's what you get for being pro-Trump. It's also sanctioned Serbia's monopoly oil supplier, which is controlled by Russia. The $500 million project to build a high-rise hotel, offices, and shops at the site has met fierce opposition from experts at home and abroad, as well as the Serbian public. But last week, Serbian lawmakers passed a special law clearing the way for the construction despite legal hurdles. There's corruption. It's everywhere. It's Trump-fueled, but it's everywhere. Critics say the building, as it is now, is an architectural monument seen as a symbol of resistance to the U.S.-led NATO bombing that remains widely viewed in the Balkan country as an unjust aggression. Serbia's government last year stripped the complex of protected status and signed a 99-year lease agreement with Kushner. It's just, I know it's not funny, but oh my God, this is the world we're in. The redevelopment project came into question after Serbia's organized crime prosecutors launched an investigation into whether documents used to remove that status were forged. The buildings are seen as prime examples of mid-20th century architecture in the former Yugoslavia. The protesters demanded that the protected heritage status for the complex be restored and the buildings rebuilt. This is a warning that we will defend these buildings together, one of the students said. We will be the human shield. America, why can't you talk like that? Seriously, talk like that to the people destroying your country. Make a human shield. Surround the offices of the bastards that are making your life worse, instead of just grinning and bearing it. You know?
There's no grinning going on. It's just bearing. Go on, I'm listening.
Well, that's the story, pretty much. And
you better believe they're going to get that hotel out of that. I don't know about any of those other things, but
I hope they don't. That'd be awful. That would be terrible.
Yeah, I mean, just know that that level of corruption, it just seems inevitable. So respectable, I'd say. I mean, I respect the young people involved because that's a tall order.
I think you need to become acquainted with Eastern European people power, because that's what they're facing here.
No, yeah, that's what I mean by, I guess the word is laudable, their efforts there. So more power to them, because it just seems like this rush to stripping a historic status with no questions and forged documents, possibly. I mean, that just, it reeks.
Earlier this year, the government in Albania, which is another Balkan country, approved a $1.6 billion plan, also from Kushner, for a project to develop a luxury resort on the communist-era fortified island in the Adriatic coast. Yeah. Well, you know, if we can't count on the American people to fight back, well, I guess we can count on people in other countries with more of a backbone to fight back. Although, you know, I am impressed with what people are doing here. Don't get me wrong. We just need more than the No Kings rallies. We need to be able, you know, we see the effects that it has when you start to squeeze the regime and you start to actually make them feel the discomfort that they're bringing to all of us. If you have people that are willing to stand up for what it is you elected them for, you can win. You can achieve great things. And that's why, you know, I'm happy that Mamdani won, because this is a guy, you know, whether you agree with his economic outlook or not, he basically is willing to fight. And that is what most politicians are not willing to do. You know, he's young, he's articulate, he's different. Let's at least give him a chance. And let's not be panicking by, you know, him being a social democrat or a democratic socialist. I don't even know the difference. Yeah, I know there's a difference, but the point is, socialism is not the enemy here, and we have elements of socialism in our society. We have existing socialist countries, such as the Scandinavian republics, that are quite successful, and the people are very happy. Don't just say, "Oh, it's the worst regimes on earth," you know, in the past, the Soviet Union, etc. we are more Soviet than we are democratic at this point. So it's not the socialist part that's what you need to be afraid of. It's the authoritarian part, because that is something that gets stronger every day.
Yeah, and I think that if there was some sort of other strategy, if this the kinds of pressure that people were putting on the regime proper was a multitude of ways, I could see him supporting sectoral or other direct action, like a general strike or something like that. I think he would stand with people. He would rise to those moments to truly represent the interests of labor, the interests of people that are hurting. And that's the kind of stuff that's going to be interesting, because the political moment is ripe for that kind of action. And with leadership that might say, like, hey, you know, I'm kind of with the people on this one, mm-hmm. it could be another avenue to register that dissatisfaction.
Yeah, you know, I like to ask the people that are so in a panic by his election, what it is specifically they're afraid of. They paint these incredible pictures about how crime is going to run rampant and everything's going to fall apart. Okay, but you know, that's coming from your head. You know, you're making this scenario up. What do you base that on? The fact that he wants to have free buses. You know, okay, he wants to have free buses. He can't just make free buses. You know, he has to work with the state. But if that's something he wants to work towards. Look, we have a free ferry. We have a free Staten Island ferry. We have free transfers on mass transit. We didn't have those in the past. There's definitely steps you can make to make transit more affordable for more people. Absolutely. It's nothing you have to assume, okay, it's going to be a Stalinist republic after that.
I liked his answer. I think his answer was like, where there's a will, there's a way. Because I think Kathy Hochul was talking about it being... concerning because it would offset ridership on the subways, which aren't free, da 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 da. But I think if you can install cameras and buses for certain routes to ticket people that are blocking them, I think you can find routes and zones and ways to alleviate some of the costliness of places that people need to get on and off, in high congestion or another sort of high like traffic times of day, you know, commuting. And
we
stuff
have
on.
We have a candidate who recognizes that it's expensive. It's too expensive to live in New York, and you know that has been his theme, and it resonates. I don't think he's going to drop that. I don't think he's going to forget about that. I think he's going to continue to find ways to make New York more affordable for more people. And why would you be afraid of that? You know, we have so many vacant apartments of belonging to millionaires and billionaires that are just sitting around, not used. And we have a lot of homeless people, a lot of people who can't afford the home they're in now. And they need to be taken seriously because they are New York. They are what keep the city going. So, you know, I'll say this. If we had a bunch of Mondanis, you know, in the Senate, they would not have caved. Ask yourself that. You know, if you're worried about this guy, okay, now put him in the Senate and multiply him by 8. Do you think those 8 Mamdanis would have caved? I don't think they would have. And that's what we need. We need people who don't cave. And you're not going to agree on everything. Sure, you might have different policies about Israel. Although, you know, I heard something today where outgoing Mayor Adams, oh boy, what a clown. He wants to go to Israel now, hang out with Netanyahu because, you know, why not meet some war criminals? And then he wants Netanyahu to come celebrate New Year's in New York. I like that idea. You know what? Come over, Netanyahu. Come over to New York and be the guest of Mayor Adams as his term expires at the stroke of midnight on January 1st, because then Mamdani will take control. And I believe he has pledged to have you arrested if you ever set foot in New York because you are a war criminal. Well, okay, you are an accused war criminal. Let's have it settled in court, all right? And that is something that I would like to see. I would like to see that ever so much. I'm sure many people would. Many people throughout the entire planet would. You know, you have to be accountable for your actions, and his actions are inhumane. Now, you know, I respect somebody who stands up to the status quo and says, yeah, you know, I'm listening, but I don't agree. And I believe in this, and I'm going to fight for that. And that's what we need more of. We need more people that are willing to do that. All right, with that note, today is Remembrance Day, known here as Veterans Day, also known as Armistice Day. And it's a solemn occasion. You know, it's something that is observed around the world. We were watching the ceremonies earlier today in the United Kingdom. We actually saw them on Remembrance Sunday. But basically, it's the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month when hostilities ended in World War One. And every year, there are moving ceremonies in the UK as well as throughout the world, Canada, United States. They call it different things, but basically, it's a way of honoring veterans, you know, people who have fought in wars and people who have sacrificed much in those wars. I just think it's important to, you know, to keep that in mind in the middle of November, because we often forget. We often forget about those people. We see the parades. You know, today was a holiday, caught a lot of people by surprise, but it happens every year. And every year we try to recognize it. We have poppies now. We wear poppies. You might see people in various countries, not the United States. I'm not sure why. It might be a Commonwealth thing. They wear red poppies on their left side of above their heart, and basically for I think the last Friday of October until the end of today, the 11th of November.
Yes, we have very nice handmade felt poppies that are reusable. So we've affixed them to our overcoats and been wearing them.
And not a single person asked us what they mean.
Not a damn person said one thing.
Well, you know, I don't really care, but, you know, I would like people to take an interest. And because the only reason we're wearing them is because we took an interest. We saw, you know, commentators on television at the BBC and CBC. Why are they wearing this? Why are they wearing it at this time? And how do I get one? Because why wouldn't you want to wear a poppy to commemorate people who, you know, fought for democracy and basically are probably our relatives? You know, it's a good way to pay tribute.
Yes, and this is actually the last evening, and later on, I think we will have a ceremony to remove the poppies.
I don't know about the ceremony, but yeah, we are going to hopefully remember to take them off.
Oh, you didn't know about that part?
No, I didn't. But it's worth looking at. I'm sure it's on YouTube. Just look up the Remembrance Day ceremonies, both for today and for Sunday. It's called Remembrance Sunday, the big one. Sometimes the 11th falls on a Sunday, and then you have a whole big thing. But there are less and less people, obviously, that have seen a certain wars. World War II is basically just a handful now, and there's nobody left from World War One. But they've fortunately, there are so many hostilities and wars and casualties and things like that that they can just keep this going forever.
Yeah, you too could be a veteran of a war.
And it all takes place at the Cenotaph. Did I say it right? Did I say that word right? Cenotaph is a monument for people who have died, but the people who have died are not at the monument. That's what cenotaph means.
They're buried elsewhere.
And it's in the middle of London. It's actually right in the middle of a street in London, and that's where these ceremonies happen every year at this time.
It's a really beautiful kind of obelisk in the middle of a street, and people place wreaths of poppies from various parts of the country.
We have to go. But we're going to go out with this piece that kind of commemorates all that. And write to us, otw@2600.com. Good night.
They disembarked in 45. And no one spoke and no one smiled. There were too many spaces in the line. And gathered the cenotaph, all agreed with hand on heart to sheathe the sacrificial knives. But now she stands upon Southampton dock with her handkerchief and her summer frock clings to her wet body in the rain. In quiet desperation, knuckles white upon the slippery reins, she bravely waves the boys goodbye again. The final cut.